I think we've done bad job in kind of educating what Lightning is in the beginning of Lightning. Like I still see this narrative like cheap, free. No, Lightning isn't cheap and Lightning isn't free. Lightning is a cheaper way and a more efficient way and a more optimized way to do on-chain transactions. That's what Lightning is. And it is a scaling solution to a degree of 2 or 3 order of magnitude. What I'm trying to say, that Lightning is for people that would have used the chain regardless of Lightning. Lightning is just a way to optimize your on-chain transactions, basically.
Roy, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show, actually. It's been a very, very, very long time, but... Yes,
I think you're one of the first podcasts that I interviewed on 2020.
That sounds about right. It's either that or 2019, but it was way back when. That's awesome. That's wow. An honor. That's an honor. I was the first. Hell yeah.
That's an honor for me as well.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, welcome back. And just for the sake of the audience who may not know you, the people who may not know you, why don't you just introduce yourself, why we had you on the show the first time, what you're building, and all that fun stuff.
Sure. So my name is Roy Scheinfeld. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Breeze. And Breeze is a company that is doing Lightning stuff since 2018. We started off by creating the Breeze wallet, which is a popular non-custodial Lightning wallet among the Bitcoin Lightning community. And recently, we've been working on other Lightning integrations, including building what we call the Breeze SDK that allows developers, vendors, companies, services to add Lightning payments to their services with a very shallow learning curve.
Yeah, and nice. Yeah, and for anybody who... remembers like the reads and stuff, we've done a bunch of reads of your articles, probably one of my favorite actually that was something that kind of put a pin in something or articulated something that I was having trouble with, but like it was somewhere in my mind, but I was having a hard time like grasping it and like putting it into words, was Lightning and the internet, the choosing the right path. Between the idea of, I guess it was Lightning maximalism and Lightning generalism or something, as far as like the data transfer on the network. I thought that was a really, really phenomenal article. And for anybody who knows, like everybody knows about LSPs and everything, is that you basically pioneered that idea. Like Breeze was the first. You created the idea of Lightning as a service where you could have a non-custodial financial and payment service on the Bitcoin as a entity, as a connection into the Lightning network. And I thought that was such a perfect, like, I know exactly where this is going and where like recognizing the limitations and the profound advantages and sitting yourself like just kind of like right in the middle of it. It's like, okay, what can we do that is most beneficial and like solves as many problems as possible for the user while not being a fiat bank, like while taking advantage of all the powerful things that make Lightning and Bitcoin entirely unique. And the LSP model was just a fascinating idea. And it's so cool to see that become the norm. Like that has, that's become the thing, you know?
Yes, that's very cool for me as well, to see companies like C Equals that is part of Block. Jack Dorsey has an LSP company.
Yeah.
That's kind of amazing. and Synonym, that is funded by Tether, is an LSP company. So, it's very exciting to see something that we kind of helped bootstrapped and kind of brought to market gain some traction. And I really think that LSPs are playing a crucial part in the evolution of Lightning and play even more important part in the future of Lightning.
Yeah. I mean, for mobile, it 100% is, I mean, far and away the best experience. A breeze, and outside of the fact that I use Moon for some short span of time before I realized, like, and I guess it was just like their fee structure because they're doing like atomic swaps practically every time. But Moon always, there were a couple of different things that were, and not to hate on the wallet either, but just like frictions that got to me. Like it didn't seem completely obvious the way it was working, and it took me a bit to work that out. And then the really big thing was that I had my backup phrase, but I did not realize that my password for Moon Wallet, that they kind of had a unique system for their backup. And so when my phone, which is funny, I actually have it sitting over here just because all my tech stuff is out on the thing, but my phone crapped on me, like kicked the bucket one morning. This was my seven. I was trying to squeeze like two more years out of this, and it died on me, and I had to recover like 23 Bitcoin and Lightning wallets. So I had a really fun time in like going through a recovery process for like a week. And literally the only sats I lost was like 200,000 or 300,000 sats in Moon. And it was because their backup process, Breeze was so easy, so easy. I mean, because it's like backed up to iCloud by default is like the default setting if you want to select a backup. I just had to do on iCloud, which I didn't even use much on iCloud at the time, but I was like, man, easy backup for Lightning. I just booted it back up and it was like, it was there. I was like, oh, well, this was easy. But for some reason, I didn't have the password to Moon because I thought it was local. Most of them are local. It's like a PIN number, right? You know, if I lose my hardware wallet, my PIN number isn't relevant anymore. It's just my seed. And I guess that was just like, that system was in my mind. And
interesting. I thought they had like email recovery as well.
I think they did, and I never put in my email. There was some part of the process that I missed and some part of the process that I did, and I thought I had done enough, and I just never, I mean, part of it was my fault. I'm not really hating on Moon. And I think I just made some assumptions and they were wrong. But you know, pour one out to Satoshi for the lost Satoshis. But,
I definitely think Moon like brought something interesting to market, and the fact that you can kind of interrupt with Lightning even if you don't run a Lightning wallet.
Yeah.
Like the submarine swap, the atomic swap model is interesting. And you see, by the way, other companies that kind of adopting the same model now. What Aqua is doing on top of Liquid is practically the Moon model just on
Liquid.
The Liquid sidechain.
Yeah. I was actually about to bring that up because I thought that was a clever extension of what Moon was doing by utilizing the federated Liquid to basically eliminate the major friction with Moon's model.
Exactly.
Which is really cool. So Breeze Wallet. In fact, I've switched over to Phoenix, and I've been just using Phoenix for a really long time. Which Phoenix is a wonderful wallet too. But I was curious because at one point we talked a while ago that Breeze was going to be rebooted with the SDK. And we haven't really got into that yet, and we will in just a moment. But I just wanted to ask personally, has Breeze done that revamp yet? Is it running on the SDK now?
So the current Breeze app is not running on the Breeze SDK.
Okay.
And that's why you still have the same kind of UX challenges that are part of our LND Neutrino model exists in the Breeze app. We actually have another Breeze app. We call it SeaBreeze or Breeze Cloud, which is it's not public.
Don't
try to look it in the Play Stores, but it's actually the Breeze implementation on top of the Breeze SDK. we mostly use it right now as a reference app for our design partners that are building using the Breeze SDK. We have like a showcase app to show them here. And that's the way that like a kind of a generic wallet would use the SDK. There's a decision that we'll have to make in the not so distant future, what to do about the Breeze app, what to do about Seabreeze. Are we going to release it to market? Are we going to deprecate the Breeze, the current Breeze app? That's open question for us. We're mostly been focused on our B2B side of the business and less on the B2C. But surprisingly enough, like the throughput and the payments and the number of transactions that are going through Breeze, the app, are just on the rise, are always on the rise.
That's awesome.
So I don't really know currently what to do. I don't want to be Google in a way that says like, okay, we're stopping the service.
Yeah.
On one hand, on the other end, like we need some kind of business focus that's aligned with the future, the way that we see the future of Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we kind of exhausted the, we're implementing it as part of the Breeze SDK. We're implementing all the lessons that we've learned as part of working on the Breeze app.
Mm-hmm.
So our like the Breeze app was an essential part of our journey in understanding the Lightning technology, like inventing this concept of LSPs, optimizing, understanding what's a Lightning node, what it means to run a Lightning node on a mobile device. Does running a Lightning node on a mobile device is the optimal model? Also, is there a market? Is there a go-to-market for peer-to-peer payment? Like that, without this consumer-facing app, we wouldn't understand, we wouldn't have the knowledge that we have now on the Lightning technology and on the peer-to-peer go-to-market.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to implement all the lessons that we've learned from the Breeze app into the Breeze SDK. So the Breeze SDK is really kind of the way that we see it is the right way to do Lightning.
Yeah.
And we want users to experience, to have like a different experience than the experience that sometimes they have in the Breeze app right now. Although there are advantages to the, like I'm not diminishing the stuff and the advantages and the value proposition that we have in the existing Breeze app. For example, the Breeze app is still a very, very, very private app compared to Phoenix, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix are not using Neutrino. Phoenix are doing trampoline payments, which means that they are aware of the destination when you're sending payments. That doesn't exist in the Breeze app, which is kind of a fully sovereign Lightning node running on your mobile device.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. You're catching me in a place where we're kind of undecided on what to do with our consumer side of the business. But you will definitely see applications running on top of the Breeze SDK very soon. Like there are several applications that are kind of expanding right now, expanding their beta. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. So you've basically in this, like after kind of building out the LSP model, you've shifted from business to consumer, the kind of the Breeze model of like, let's onboard as many people as we can, as far as like direct users and the peer-to-peer space, which is funny because you say that we actually wouldn't have the data about the peer-to-peer ecosystem for Lightning without that. And that's a really great point, is that, you know, like all the people that I have on board, it's amazing how like Noster and like some of these things, like when you finally have a use case for it, how much you end up using it or how easy it is to use. Like the low amount of friction I have had in Phoenix and my use of Phoenix and Breeze, which, as you say, like Breeze had, like if you weren't opening it regularly, but I was opening mine every day, so I would never really notice the syncing part of it. You know, like if you open it every like 2 hours, you're downloading a, you know, 300 kilobytes worth of neutrino filter. So it's like no big deal, right? But if you use it like once a week, it would take like a you know, 10 seconds, 20 seconds or something to boot up, because you're downloading information from the network, because you're literally a sovereign node. You're a light node, but you're one where you are the one making the payments. You are the one finding the routes and all of that stuff, as you mentioned. Whereas Phoenix, they are doing all of that for me. So I'm offloading all of that work to another machine, and I'm losing that privacy, but obviously it's, you know, you get the boost of like taking off those little, that second here and the 3 seconds there, you know? So there's obviously a trade-off. In that context is like, you know, we get to see what happens when you create that experience, and how easy it is to use. And it's so funny is that, like, I don't even know when it happened, but it was somewhere. It was somewhere when I was using Breeze and then shifting over to Phoenix and then getting on Noster, which I guess would be like a year and some change now, that like just everything just became Lightning. And I don't know when that happened, but then like suddenly Bitcoin was slow and frustrating to go back to. You know, like I was so used to everything just working. And it's amazing that it seemed to have made that leap so cleanly. And I guess that's just the LSP model, but maybe just expand on what you've seen with the development in Lightning, let's say the past 2 years or 2021 to 2024 here. What are the major movements? And then afterward, project out a couple of years, and where do you think things are going, and where will Breeze be in that?
Sure. So definitely, I think the leap in terms of user experience was driven by the LSD mode. Mm-hmm. The fact that you have an entity that kind of obfuscates all the technical complexity away from end users and allow you to magically connect to the internet without understanding the underlying implementation, I think that was kind of the major shift in Lightning user experience. The network grew as well. From a liquidity standpoint, the network grew. But I'll give you like a mental image that I have in mind on kind of Lightning. Lightning is Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is about peer-to-peer payments. But it's how professional are you in executing this peer-to-peer payment? So imagine Lightning as kind of the railway system or the highway and roads that you have that are connecting between different places. So we're basically kind of shifted from gravel roads. If you remember the era where everyone kind of tried to run their own Lightning nodes and used Umbrel and used old laptops to mm-hmm. run and set up liquidity and kind of guess where to open channels. We've just gotten more professional in terms of managing liquidity, kind of shifting from gravel roads to highways, and the hobbyists are less involved in Lightning right now. You see more professional nodes that are maintained by people that have a deep understanding on Lightning and how on node management and have the liquidity to support their nodes. So basically, this upgrade from gravel to concrete was great for Lightning because it means more liquidity in the network, more professional nodes, which results in reliable payments. Basically, it improves payment reliability. So that, in conjunction with the fact that we kind of lower the barrier of entry with LSPs, I think the combination of the two kind of led us to an improvement in the Lightning user experience. Now, it doesn't mean that there aren't liquidity challenges and there aren't more challenges in Lightning, but at least we we've kind of went through the adolescent part of life of Lightning in this kind of maturing from hobbyist to the professional era. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of criticism about Lightning because people are kind of disillusioned. You see that in Bitcoin Twitter. People are disillusioned that that Lightning isn't for end user. It's only for B2B and for like exchanges can interact with other exchanges and vendors can interact with other vendors, but it's not for end users. I don't think that's the case. But I think definitely the fact that professionals and companies started building seriously on top of the Lightning infrastructure led to a place where Lightning transactions are much more reliable than in the past.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the most recent, just in the context of, like, I know it's confusing for a lot of people when they're receiving and they don't understand what's happening on the back end, where like they have 20 transactions that have like almost no fee, and then one transaction will have a big fee because you're opening a channel. And I get that with, it's just the same with basically any of the LSP model generally. Aside from that, like that's the major friction, you know, which is not a problem of the payment didn't work. It's a problem of like, I don't quite understand where the fees are coming from in various cases, there might be a way to obscure that. I made a post on Nostr the other day of this thought of actually having a separate balance in the wallet. I mean, you know how like in a Lightning channel, normally you're always going to allocate some towards a fee balance anyway, is mm-hmm. actually have it separate out in the wallet where every single time you receive a payment, you literally always have like a 0.5% fee or something. And that either that goes to the LSP and then the LSP tries to play the market on like making sure that anytime they open or close a channel that they make a profit, you know, like so that they actually close the channel for you. The other would be to actually have like a allocation toward it where you would actually have a balance, like let's say my balance was actually 550,000 sats in my wallet, but the 25,000 sats is literally just like a fee balance and it's entirely mine. It's not even in like the fee part of the channel, but it's just there in case I need to close so that I don't think that I have 550 and then suddenly I have 525.
I think the problem with Lightnings is about expectations. Like, okay, I don't know what people expect from Lightning, to be honest. But the way that I try kind of to explain it is that Lightning is an on-chain optimization solution. Mm-hmm. It's not magic. Like, there's no magic here.
Yeah.
You have a way to do Lightning payments in a more efficient manner. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean there's no fee. It doesn't mean, I think we've done bad job in kind of educating what Lightning is. In the beginning of Lightning, like I still see this narrative like cheap, free. No, Lightning isn't cheap and Lightning isn't free. Lightning is a cheaper way and a more efficient way and a more optimized way to do on-chain transactions. That's what Lightning is, and it is a scaling solution to a degree of two or three order of magnitude. But Lightning, basically, what I'm trying to say, that Lightning is for people that would have used the chain regardless of Lightning.
Yeah.
Lightning isn't for people that would have not used the chain. Meaning, if you want to do one Satoshi zap to someone, Lightning isn't the right solution for you. Lightning is the right solution for you if you would have used the change, if you would have used a mainnet regardless of Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
Lightning is just a way to optimize your on-chain transactions, basically.
Yeah.
And yes, you can really get to very low fees in that model, and you can get into a very efficient way of executing, including instant settlement. But there's no magic here, and it's not that kind of get rid of fees, and it's the ultimate scaling solution for Bitcoin. No, that's not what Lightning is about. There are so much highways that you can pave. That there's so much roads that you can create. So I think people kind of need to set the right expectations. I think we, as educators of Lightning, we need to set the right expectations as well. And I think in that context, people will get into the SDK, and I think, and you kind of alluded to that in the beginning of our call. Lightning isn't a generic solution in my mind. And it's not like a one size fit all, and it won't solve all the problems that we have in Bitcoin. It's a very tailored solution to specific use cases, and there are use cases where Lightning doesn't make sense. The Zaps, for example, are use cases where Lightning, and again, for me, Lightning is only non-custodial Lightning. Like when I say Lightning, I don't want kind of to people listening to get confused, because when I say Lightning, for me, it's like Bitcoin. Like there's no custodial Bitcoin, and there's no a custodial Lightning. For me, when I use the terms Bitcoin and Lightning, is only in the kind of the purest fashion of non-custodial Bitcoin and Lightning. Yeah.
You can have custodial that can send or speak Lightning, but that is still custodial. It's not Lightning.
Exactly.
That's a good point. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
And it's not bad, but Lightning in its purest form, in the peer-to-peer payment form, can't really work well for Zaps. That's the reality. But it worked extremely well, and it's exactly the right solution if you would have used the chain instead.
Mm-hmm. I would say it does work. I say it does work really well for Zaps if you're going out. It doesn't work for Zaps on the way in.
Yes.
Like for receiving. Yes. So if you have no Bitcoin, because like there is nothing like when I do Zaps, it's funny. I receive on a custodial and I send out on Phoenix. So I have a non-custodial that is my main wallet that I use, which obviously was Breeze, now is Phoenix. I may switch back to Breeze, but I'm now curious where we're going to go, and we'll talk about this with your business to consumer side of things. But what's funny is I'll receive on a custodial and then just let it get to a point where like I'm totally happy with an on-chain transaction fee to get it back into the non-custodial. And so I just use it kind of as like a buffer. And it gets 300,000 sats, 400,000 sats. It's like, boom. And I just withdraw it back to my non-custodial. So
exactly.
It works with liquidity. It doesn't, it only sends out if you don't have liquidity, or it's only great for sending out if you don't have liquidity.
Exactly. But also sending out, you know, there's like kind of the minimum HTLC issue. Like you can send one Satoshi, this Satoshi can get stuck in Lightning Network. And in order kind of to claim this Satoshi, the channel needs to be force closed. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make sense to pay the closing fees for a small HTLC.
Mm-hmm.
It does make sense to pay the fee of the closing transaction, the closing channel fee in case it's needed in order to kind of to protect the network. For people not to abuse the network, you need to have this kind of a closing mechanism. But if the entire network would kind of send only one Satoshis, then Lightning isn't the right framework to execute this transaction. It makes sense if some transactions are higher in value than the closing channel fees, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious in that context, because I've talked with a lot of people about this, and I see this a lot from people who like just crap on Lightning all the time. And there's the element, like, so what exactly causes a Lightning payment to get stuck? And what is it about the way it works that you can't just kind of let that go if it's not settled? Like, why can't, like, let's say I did a one Satoshi payment and somehow it got stuck. Why would it get stuck? Because it seems like it's it either goes all the way through and the pre-image comes back to me, or it doesn't. Why can't I just kind of like delete it and be like, all right, let's just revoke, let's just like not do this one because something went wrong, and like send that forward to my channel partner, and then we continue forward, unless you're just talking about like my direct channel partner goes offline or something.
But it's always happens when you suspect your direct channel partner is going offline.
Okay.
But there's a chain of reaction as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have to force close your channel, basically when you pay, when you send money, when you send HTLC, you need to have a way to kind of reclaim your fund. And the only way to reclaim your fund if your peer doesn't cooperate is to force close the channel.
Okay.
That's kind of the mechanism. And if you're force closing the channel against your peer that is now offline, your peer needs to force close the channel with you as a result as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it causes kind of a chain of force closes throughout the route. And that's a problem.
This show is brought to you by the ColdCard Hardware Wallet. My favorite setup, which I know I talk about a lot, is the Nunchuck wallet on mobile that just connects directly to or just talks NFC whenever I need a sign. The Nunchuck does not hold my keys. It is securely on my cold card, not connected to the internet, not vulnerable to a phishing email or any malware or anything like that. If I ever need to send a transaction, I just create the transaction on my Nunchuck wallet and I tap it to my cold card. I hit sign, I tap it again, and then off it goes. There is no easier interface and way of interacting that grants a higher level of security, in my opinion, than that right there. It's genuinely incredible to me that we even have this capability in the Bitcoin space. And CoinKite has just made an entire suite of fascinating security and just fun Bitcoin devices and hardware products, like the block clock. Just connect it to your node and have it show the Bitcoin price, have it show the block height, just right there on your desk in this really cool package. If you haven't checked out what they have to offer, you definitely need to. And don't, when you go over there, do not forget that I have a 9% discount code. Bitcoin Audible, all one word, gets you 9% off. And you can go through the link in the show notes or just remember the discount code, which is not hard. It's just the name of the show. You can go through the link in the show notes to go right there or just go to the store, browse around, see what you want, get yourself a solid hardware wallet, experience the tap to send with a cold card hardware wallet. It's just kind of magical. And get notified for the Q1. I'm really stoked about my Cypherpunk BlackBerry, the new model that's going to be coming out. So check that out as well. Don't forget, 9% off. The link is right in the show notes. Go check them out.
Now, part of the reason, and I want to get your thoughts on this, part of the reason why I don't think that negates the possibility or the value of a 1 sat, 100 sat payment on Lightning to me is that the problem isn't really that individual payment. The problem is that their node went offline. So like with or without the 100 sat payment, I'd have to close the channel because I'm having to just get my Bitcoin back. Like, so it seems, and maybe there's something a little bit different if there is some sort of a stuck payment in a different way, but it seems to me that it's purely if my channel partner is offline or isn't updating, then I have to force close. So that the payment itself is kind of arbitrary in that context. It's just that I am trusting the amount, really the part of the payment is that if I want to get that extra 1 sat back, I have to pay a little bit more because now I'm putting more data on chain, which is stupid. It just feels like it's like, oh, well, that's arbitrary because I don't need that 1 sat. I just want my funds out of the channel. So, but in the context of like some people say that it's not economically meaningful to have a 100 sat payment because like it could be taken from you because, you know, it costs, you know, 3,000 sats in order to get those sats back,
like to close
yeah, the channel.
But people need to understand that that's the mechanism. That's what keeps Lightning honest.
Yeah.
So we basically have to close channels for small payments because that's what makes everyone honest in the system that is called the Lightning Network.
Mm-hmm. My caveat there. I want to hit like an element of where I think it's a little bit different though. It's not a purely unsecure below the fee threshold, and then it makes sense above the fee threshold, is that everything below that costs for the attacker as much as it costs for you. So it's not that the enforceability isn't merely that, oh, you need to be able to enforce that 100 sats. It's that nobody can take that 100 sats from you because it's going to cost them $2 or whatever it is to close that channel. They can't steal 100 sats. So it's like above the fee threshold, you have economically viable, enforceable positive income. You have an enforceable positive payment, so to speak. Whereas below the fee threshold, it's not that the economic payment, it's still an economically viable payment. It's just that enforceability is a mutually assured destruction scenario where no matter what you do, correct, this payment is dead. If someone tries to steal it, if someone goes offline, whatever it is, correct, these sats are just lost.
But it's still imperative, yeah, to close the channel in these cases. That's what I'm basically trying to say.
Okay, yeah.
To say. So the fact that you are closing the channel in the case of small HTLCs is important because there are not only small payments that are going through this channel, there are also large payments that are going through this channel. Yep. And in order to kind of keep the network honest as a whole, you need this enforceability.
Everything,
even if sometimes, yeah, for kind of for arbitrary cases, the payment, as you say, you can't recuperate your payment.
Mm-hmm.
That's the cost of doing business in Lightning, and that's the cost of choosing the right peers, and that's the cost of engaging with the right peers and making sure you have enough liquidity with peers. Like that's part of the Lightning business. If you want to be in the Lightning business, you need to understand that that's part of the cost.
Yeah, for sure. How does this inform what y'all built with the SDK? How did this kind of process take you towards and maybe actually expand on this since we haven't really talked about it. I've talked about it on the show, but you know, most people listen to like one out of every three episodes because I have a lot of episodes. Break down the Breeze SDK, the Greenlight model, and
sure,
what y'all have accomplished with this thing.
Sure. So in the Breeze SDK, we kind of switched to a hybrid model where the nodes. So the Breeze SDK is kind of a holistic end-to-end solution for all your Lightning needs. Like, mm-hmm, in order to start accepting, sending or receiving Lightning payments in your app, you don't need to be a Lightning expert. You don't need to run Lightning infrastructure. The knowledge level that you have around Lightning can be very minimal in order to use the Breeze SDK. And we give you basically, we try to obfuscate everything, including nodes, liquidity, on-chain interoperability, fiat, on-ramp, off-ramp, everything is kind of obfuscated away. And we want to give you, exactly like other SaaS solutions, we want to give you very simple API to send a payment, a very simple API to accept a payment, and that's it. That's what you need to know as a developer. Behind the scenes, we kind of take care of all the heavy lifting of the Lightning infrastructure. So basically, there are four pillars to the Breeze SDK. We give you end user nodes, and that is facilitated by Greenlight. So we have a partnership with Blockstream where end users' node are running on the Greenlight cloud environment, but it's still a completely non-custodial solution because the keys resides on the user end. the keys are never leaving the user device. So it can be a laptop, it can be a mobile device, it can be even a server-side solution. The Breeze SDK users are the ones that are holding their keys, and the keys never leave the premise of the users. The nodes are running in the cloud. There's an integrated LSP provided by Breeze and by other third parties LSPs we're working with. Mm-hmm. So liquidity is being taken care of.
Wait, so it's actually like a joint? It's a group of LSPs that are providing for this? Oh, that's fascinating. Oh, okay.
So we have an open LSP model. We can also dive into that a little bit, but we have an open LSP model where people can bring liquidity in the network and serve our SDK users. So if you take a step back, you can think about the SDK as the element that generates demand for the Lightning Network. I don't know if you read, I know, you read my article, Lightning is a liquidity network, right?
Yeah. Love that one. That's a good one.
I don't know if you remember the circle there. So there's kind of the vicious circle of Lightning where a traffic drives liquidity, which drives ROI, which drives more traffic, which drives more ROI. So there's kind of a circle of financial incentive in Lightning. People want to make money, and Lightning is very important. It's very important that we'll keep Lightning as an incentivized network. It has to be incentivized exactly like the chain, by the way, exactly like Bitcoin mainnet. Like Bitcoin wouldn't work without miner generating profit, without incentives. And the same goes for Lightning. We need the Lightning network to be incentivized from a financial standpoint. So people that are putting liquidity in the Lightning network that are facilitating payments in Lightning, they need to generate money. They need to make money.
Yeah.
And basically what we're trying to do with the SDK is to stimulate this circle within Lightning. So we drive demand via the SDK. We can talk about more, but we're going to bring hundreds and millions of users to Lightning through our SDK. And we need to accommodate this demand by people that are wanting and interested in generating ROI out of their Bitcoins. Like the only way to generate Bitcoins out of Bitcoin in a non-custodial fashion is Lightning.
Is Lightning, yeah.
There's no other mechanism. So we're working, our Breeze is an LSP, but we're also working with third parties LSPs that are putting their liquidity inside the network and providing liquidity to the Breeze SDK users. And everything is done like in a non-custodial. We don't take custody over anyone's funds. And they are getting ROI because of the transactions being executed by the Breeze SDK users. So liquidity is being taken care of as part of the Breeze SDK model and what we call the open LSP model. We provide on-chain, full on-chain interoperability, so we can kind of on-ramp and off-ramp from the chain.
Mm-hmm.
And we started something called Fiat Link, which is a Lightning to Fiat on-ramp solution, on-ramp off-ramp solution. So you can also kind of go directly from Fiat to Lightning. And I think that's another piece of user experience that is missing in the Lightning ecosystem.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. See, I'd heard briefly about that, but I didn't realize how tightly integrated that was going to be. And maybe we'll get to that in just a second, because I wanted to ask something else. So with the open LSP model and like being able to bring other liquidity into it, let's say I have I'm somebody with 10 Bitcoin wanting to make an ROI, and I want to get involved in Lightning. Let's say I have, you know, decent technical expertise. Is it a requirement that somebody in this situation be like a hardcore, like I'm running Lightning infrastructure, or are you actually reaching out to people where someone else can basically do the LSP management and you're looking for generic liquidity from someone who kind of just knows what they're getting into?
Great question.
Yeah.
Yeah, great question. So we're what I call a design partner phase. So we're trying to figure it out exactly like where to draw the line between like technical expertise, lightning understanding, like what are the ultimate goal is to make it as simple as possible and to productize the LSP part of the business. So anyone will be able kind of to just put their liquidity and everything magically will happen. But there is a chasm to cross there and there's a journey to go through till we get to the stage. Currently, we're working with individuals that have 25 Bitcoin and above. So I'm not taking anyone. So from a Bitcoin standpoint, like it needs to be significant because we're kind of handholding these people throughout the process, and it takes a lot of breeze as a company. So we're working with selected partners. So we're putting the threshold kind of high right now. And in terms of technical expertise, we kind of constantly lowering the barrier of entry. So we used to work with really lightning professionals. Now we're working with people with like kind of minimal IT understanding because we've gotten better in terms of how to help them kind of run the LSP and manage the LSP.
Nice. Okay, that's interesting. So how would payments and stuff like, I guess these LSPs, if you're setting up something new, is this going to be something that is run on like Blockstream infrastructure, like Greenlight, where they're the only ones with the keys or whatever, but it's still being hosted in that context? Or is this just kind of like hosted wherever, like, and it's up to
hosted
wherever.
Yes.
Okay.
Hosted wherever. We have an Amazon configuration and like we have a self-hosted configuration, basically hosted wherever.
Okay. And I don't want to go too long on this, but I am actually really curious about this because this is part of it that I don't really have a picture of. Let's say I have 25 Bitcoin and I want to put it on Lightning. I want to participate in this LSP thing. First, what kind of returns are actually, I know it's young, like Breeze SDK is like brand new and you're just looking at services that are doing it, but maybe in the context of like the Breeze LSP that you've had so far, like what kind of, using Bhatia as a Lightning Network reference rate, are we looking at right now? And what kind of growth have we seen in that over time for just kind of making a future projection?
So LSPs are uniquely positioned to generate ROI in a more efficient way than routing nodes, because LSPs are the gateway for the network. So it's not like users have a choice. I want users to have a choice, but there's not a lot of LSPs. Let's take the Breeze app as an example, or the Phoenix app that you're using. You're basically bound to use either the Breeze. You're not bound to use, but you need to have like a higher level of technical expertise not to use the Breeze LSP inside the Breeze app. But Phoenix, for example, Phoenix don't give you an option to bring your own LSP or to be your own LSP, unlike Breeze. So basically you're forced, you're locked to the Phoenix LSP when you're using the Phoenix wallet. And their business model is not from the wallet. Their business model is from the LSP because they're taking routing fees on every time you're making a Lightning transaction. That's the inherent business model that exists in Lightning, kind of generating Lightning fees from Lightning transactions. And LSPs are uniquely positioned to make ROI and to generate a significant ROI because users don't have a choice, unlike the inherent implementation in Lightning when you do routing. the routing algorithm is kind of optimized to choose the more efficient path always. Mm-hmm. And it can be capacity, it can be lightning fees, it can be a lot of criteria, but it's an open market, completely open free market. There's always arbitrage opportunities, and there's always someone that will decide to do zero fees, mm-hmm. and someone with more economical power can capture a transaction at any given time. Like it's kind of the wild, wild west there.
Yeah.
Whereas in LSPs, it's kind of more predictable because, and then we'll get to the SDK model as well. In the Breeze app, for example, we're doing above 5% yearly ROI on our Bitcoins.
5%? Holy crap.
Yeah.
5%? Holy crap. That's crazy. I imagined 1 or 2.
I think if you're running a very efficient routing node, you can do 1 or 2. But I think if you're running an efficient LSP, you can do 5 or 6.
Wow. And
right now. Again, it's right now. And let's take it one step forward. This is a generic solution which isn't really optimized for ROI. Let me explain what I mean. We talked about Lightning isn't one size fits all, and Lightning, there are some use cases that aren't a good fit for Lightning. Basically, what we're trying to do with the SDK is to segment users and to see different patterns and different use cases of Lightning. Some use cases will be more economical justifiable than others. Meaning, if you're doing one Satoshi Zap, your LSP will make less ROI. Let's say you're using Lightning in the context of LN markets or a trading app. There are more high frequency, high volume transactions if you're a trader, mm-hmm. than an occasional zapper. So I think by segmenting Lightning and by focusing on a very specific use cases, I think you can do much better than 5%.
Wow, that's crazy. Wow, that was not what I expected. So what would the process look like post? So I have 25 Bitcoin and I'm curious about this thing and I see, okay, I can have an ROI. Like, how would I plug into the Breeze SDK? How would I work with you and Breeze technology and all that stuff?
Yeah, we help you set up your, depending on your Lightning knowledge, we mm-hmm. help you set up your Lightning node and install our, what we call LSPD. That's the LSP daemon software that we have in order mm-hmm. kind of to serve the Breeze SDK users. We help you kind of configure this entire setup. And basically what we do, we have a discussion together with our LSPs on which users they are interested to serve, because we have dozens of design partners in various implementation stages, and then we kind of assign them to a specific segment of the SDK users, and then the system just works.
Yeah. Wow.
But there's no free lunches, though, Guy. Yeah. I want to kind of say, like, your 25 Bitcoins are
hot wallet.
Mm-hmm. So
for sure. In fact, like, how are the vulnerabilities and like risks managed? You know, like, for one thing that I had even looked into at one point was LN Bank, which was a plugin for BTC Pay. And what's funny is I had it in a list of things to go check out. And when I went to install it,
exploited.
It had already been some exploit had happened. Like, thank God I actually procrastinated on that. And people actually got drained. Granted, that's a plugin for BTC Pay is a little bit different, you know, setup, and clearly didn't have, you know, a large business team behind it. But nonetheless, like, that is a risk. You're running a hot wallet. Your keys are live on the network. So like, how do you mitigate that? How do you think about that when, you know, you're bringing people on with like huge sums of Bitcoin and liquidity?
So first, we're eating our own dog food, and we've been eating our own dog food for the past 5 years now. So our LSP model is very, very well battle tested in the field. And nice. They, believe me, people try to exploit us in every possible way.
Our own dog food. Oh, I've not heard that one before.
So that's one thing. The other thing, we have best practices, like, never, basically what you want to get into a place where you allocate all your liquidity into Lightning channels. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to put 25 bit. Let's say you have a newly LSP and you don't have any Bitcoins allocated mm-hmm. within the node. Put a small amount of Bitcoins. Get them allocated within Lightning channels, because once they're allocated within Lightning channels, then your funds are kind of secured. How would an exploiter would steal the funds that are allocated inside Lightning channels? That's another level of complexity to kind of spend the funds from your Lightning channels. Mm-hmm. They can. But it's a very, very complicated. It's a different level of a hack to kind of get yourself into the node and start running payments through Lightning.
Yeah.
They can try and force close, but force close also have a delay. And once you understand someone else kind of force close the channel, you have the opportunity to regain control over your server. I think Lightning in that regard, has been battle tested very well. We haven't seen exploits on Lightning node. We saw exploits when there's an additional software on top of your Lightning node. That's why, for example, at Breeze,
gotcha. Yeah.
We don't run anything inside our node. It's just kind of either LND or Core Lightning. We don't install additional software, third-party software inside our nodes. I think if you're doing that and you're using something like best practices in terms of your hosted environment or self-hosted environment, I think the risk is definitely conservative and reasonable. Mm-hmm. As long as you don't do crazy things, like don't allocate 100 Bitcoins in your on-chain wallet inside the node. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Just incrementally add Bitcoin that is corresponding to the demand that you see from you as an LSP.
Swan Bitcoin has the full suite of Bitcoin financial services. You can instantly buy, with your bank account or wire transfer, any amount of Bitcoin up to $10 million worth. And you can easily set up what I have been doing for ages, which is an automatic purchase of Bitcoin on a weekly or monthly basis. You just pick your time frame and then automatically withdraw it to your cold storage. And still they have free withdrawals to self-custody, which I was sure would be gone by now. But you should always treat any custodian as a point of failure. And luckily, you won't have to go anywhere for all of the information and advice you need for why you should withdraw and how to do it safely, because Swan Bitcoin has all of the resources you need and will regularly remind you. About 80% or more of their customers automatically withdraw their coins. That is an amazing feat, if you ask me. Then they also have the Swan IRA if you have a traditional IRA and you want to get it allocated to Bitcoin. And there's so much more. With Swan Private, they have inheritance planning. You also have Swan business accounts, and you can even do Bitcoin as a part of your employee benefit plans. They have an advisory. They have the Swan Vault, a multi-sig service for those who want to have the benefits of holding the majority of their keys, but still also want to be able to rely on a trusted institution in the case of an emergency or a disaster. If you haven't started into Bitcoin yet, Swan is an amazing place to begin. Go to swan.com/guy. The link will be right there in the description. Again, that is swan.com/guy. And they will know that I sent you, and my beautiful face will be right there at the top of the page to greet you. I am a longtime user myself, and a huge thank you to Swan for supporting this show, and I definitely recommend you check them out.
Got you. Yeah. So that's crazy. This is in a slightly different state than I guess I knew or thought about, which is really, really exciting. And I don't think I totally grasped the open LSP idea that you were able to pull liquidity like that for kind of a community of LSPs, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. This is just really, really cool, actually. Mm-hmm. Let's take it one step into the future. So eventually we're going to, you know, max out at this model for the bulk of payments and use cases and like consumers and stuff we can bring on. Where do you see kind of the next layer? Where do you see the best case or the thing that you desire most for another efficiency boost or another layer of just generic scaling on top of this? And I'll ask specifically, have you implemented splicing? And what are your thoughts on... Actually, I'll leave the second one open-ended. So have you implemented splicing? Are you intending to do splicing? What's the next thing out that you're hoping for or reaching for or planning for, I guess?
Yeah, great question. So I don't think we kind of even started to exhaust the scaling opportunity that we have with the existing Lightning infrastructure. So
yeah, for
forget
sure,
about
for sure.
all the FUD. Yeah. Forget about all the FUD that in Twitter and again, I'll be the first to say that Lightning isn't perfect and there are challenges with Lightning, but I'm super confident that Lightning is not just the present, but also the future of Lightning. It is the interoperability layer between all things Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So I'm very confident in the future of Lightning in that regard. And I think we can grow by at least another two order of magnitudes in just with the current infrastructure. To your splicing questions, yes, for sure. Splicing is an important tool in the toolbox of managing liquidity. It's not just the fact that you can do kind of one UTXO per user instead of having multiple channels against the same user. You can have just a single channel, which reduces the UTXO set to one mm-hmm. instead of a multiple UTXO. It's also a tool that helps LSPs to reuse their liquidity without hindering the user experience of end users, meaning instead of closing the channel, another thing that we're not crazy about in the Breeze app user experience is the fact that we have to close the channels at some point if users aren't using their Lightning wallet. Mm-hmm. And with splicing, you can just splice out liquidity and reallocate liquidity to another channel without closing existing channels.
Gotcha. That's so crazy. That is a really awesome thing in how that operates, is that you can just kind of like, rather than just closing the whole thing out and then making like a headache for the user, you can just be like, we allocated 300,000 sats for you to receive payments. You haven't received a payment in a month. So we're going to take 250,000 out of this. We're going to splice it out and into a different channel with a user that's used their wallet 3 times a day. You know, that's
exactly.
Really crazy.
Yeah. Exactly. So you have the splice in, which is kind of optimizing your UTXO set, mm-hmm. and you have the splice out that helps LSPs reallocate their liquidity without hindering the end user experience. Another shout out to Phoenix, by the way. They are the first wallet to implement splicing, mm-hmm. and they've done it in a very sleek user experience.
Yeah, I couldn't believe. I was surprised, actually. The thing I was impressed about with the way Phoenix, so shout out to them. The way they did it was that I did not suspect, I thought we were going to have a transitioning problem, but they updated the app that I was using with all the stuff in it that I was using and spliced it into one channel without really any headache at all. I had like a wait period in which it was doing a transition or whatever, but I just updated the app and then it was running. I went from like 23 channels to one channel, and there wasn't really, I was impressed by that. That was surprising. I thought there was going to be like,
they had a
shift.
Very nice, slick migration process. Mm-hmm. Although for me, I had two Phoenix installed. One worked, the other didn't.
Oh, so, okay. Okay.
Yeah. but it's okay. We're all early adopters.
Yeah, 100%.
And so hiccups are part of the process. Mm-hmm. But splicing is an important tool in the toolbox. But the main question is whether you can onboard the entire world, like billions of people, with existing UTXO capabilities
model.
And the thing is, let's take my analogy from earlier, where Lightning is kind of the highways that connects people. Currently, Breeze, what we're doing at Breeze, we're kind of connecting private houses or villas, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's one person that kind of allocates real estate, like you allocate your real estate in the mainnet, you allocate real estate, and we're building a road that's a channel between this person through an LSP to the entire network.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, we won't have enough room to build these private houses and villas, so we'll have to build either villages or apartment buildings. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we call a shared UTXO. Like you'll see a lot of discussions around what's the right way. Bitcoin should be ossified or not, and about CTV. A lot of this discussion about CTV is the ability to have a shared UTXO model, like the stuff that ARK is building. The ability to share one UTXO among many participants. So you can think about it like it's like the next generation of channel factories, mm-hmm. where multiple parties share a single UTXO. Another model is the sidechain model, where you can have like a different trust profile. By the way, every solution, ZK rollups or ARK or any sidechain that you'll choose, you're basically switching from the Bitcoin trust model to another trust model. And that's, mm-hmm. there's always a trade-off, and we need to realize that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think these solutions like Fedimint, like sidechains, Liquid, RSK, they will exist. But Lightning will still be the way to interrupt between...
It will be the communication layer between them all. Yeah.
Between them all. Yeah.
I totally agree.
And people will still have the ability to live in a villa if they want to.
Yeah.
If they don't want to share one UTXO with their neighbors, and that has an headache of its own. You can't really exit when you want. There's a trust issue. There's a censorship issue. There's all set of trade-offs. If people will want less trade-offs, they will still have the opportunity to live in their own private house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so crazy. What, let's say in the ones that you've mentioned, like let's say there's no limitation here. Let's assume that if you wanted one, you got it right now as like a dominant solution or a tool that you would really, really love in the context of like CTV or Opcat or Fedimint or eCash. Like, you know, what's the one that you think is the most promising and fits the best for the user or for, you know, a really awesome potential user experience that can really onboard a ton of people?
I think we have that. I think what bothers me in all the kind of the Lightning discourse mm-hmm. or the kind of the scaling solutions discourse is the fact that people don't realize that we have solutions at hand right now, like eCash solutions like Cashew and others exist.
Yep.
Fedi, which is built on top of Fedi Mint, exists. Fedi going to onboard a lot of people, I think. I think sidechains will onboard people, like you see in the Aqua wallet or other wallets. They will onboard users. If you're talking to me about like a more heuristic solution to share a UTXO,
yeah.
What bothers me in the CTV, like I don't think Bitcoin should be ossified, and I think we need more innovation in Bitcoin. But what bothers me is that I don't see a complete solution around CTV. I'm not a big fan of ARC. I think ARC from a liquidity constraint standpoint is too much and too centralized. Mm-hmm. I would like to see another channel factory solution that is more lightweight, but I think we're kind of talking about CTV instead of talking about the
thing you would build with CTV. Ah, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And I'm missing that deep discussion on, okay, if we have CTV, what is the solution that we'll build with CTV?
Mm-hmm.
People say like, yeah, it can be this and it can be that, but I'm not interested in it can be this or that. I want to see something. One thing that ARC is doing very, very nicely, they are building ARC on top of Liquid right now, in order kind of to prove the technology and I think that that's nice. Mm-hmm. I have some reservation around ARC, so I'm not kind of completely bullish and sold around ARC, but maybe I'll be proven wrong. I don't know. I think there are the potential of building a shared UTXO solution around CTV or something like CTV.
Mm-hmm.
The potential is endless, but we need to have this discourse. We need to have these discussions. And instead, we're talking about OpCat or OpCTV or talking about kind of concrete solution instead of talking opcodes.
Yeah. Instead of talking about like the generic tool that's supposed to create some sort of a solution, what's the actual solution? Like
what's the actual solution? Tool? Let's build. We can build these actual solutions.
We can do it now.
We can do it now. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. That's a great framing for that. I totally agree too. I think eCash is like really underappreciated, especially in the context of like being able to like in Fedimint, is the ability to provide a user a static form of ownership within a federated model, like trust model.
Yep.
Where they don't really have to think about it, and it's not like some ridiculous overhead for the federation to just like let a user be a part of the federation, you know, and then have perfect privacy from the federation itself. That the user still has privacy within the network, which is really cool. One thing that
my problem with the federation model, and I'm not kind of dismissing this model. I think these models are important. By the way, exactly like custodial model, I don't think a custodial solution will kind of disappear. I think I want custodial solutions to adopt Bitcoin and to onboard with a custody trade-off. I want them to onboard people to Lightning. But what I'm working, like where my heart is and what I'm focused on, is building kind of the neutral interoperability layer between all of that. And that's what Lightning is for me.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm curious, did you look into timeout trees? In the context of like building something with CTV, as like a simple solution or very simple architecture? Did you see timeout trees specifically?
I haven't kind of dug deep into time trees, but it's promising as well.
Sorry, I just thought it was great just in the context of like, what's the simplest possible thing you could build with CTV that basically enabled that thing that, you know, everybody talks about is the idea of like, we can share this UTXO and then we can continue to update it later, you know, like down the road.
Yes.
Like you really can't get simpler than timeout tree. Like it's just a time lock with the CTV. And then after the time lock, you can just update everybody's balances and roll it into a new CTV. So
great. But yeah. But how can we build an effective channel factory using timeout trees?
Mm-hmm. That's the question. How do you open them all as lightning channels rather than just a generic? Yeah. The generic balance.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So maybe we shift back to Greenlight and the Breeze SDK, because there's still a bit that I want to unpack there. And how is the integration? Let's push it out to the edge. What's the user experience like? You know, like one thing I talk with Mathintosh with Matthias, with Keat and everything a lot. And I always ask about Lightning. They had like a very generic, like plug in a Lightning balance or excuse me, plug in a Lightning wallet, tool in the alpha. And it was a little bit like bare bones and they're not really doing much with it there. That's kind of like down the road. But when I spoke to them, they actually mentioned like, yeah, we're thinking about doing the Breeze SDK to get it so that, you know, it's user specific or whatever. And it's just kind of like out of our hands. We're not running that. So tell me how that works. How would they implement the Breeze SDK so that I would have Lightning inside of Keat? And what does it look like?
I'll give you a concrete example from a beta that is rolling out right now. It's the Relay app. The good thing about the Breeze SDK is that everyone chooses kind of their own user experience. Like it's very interesting. For example, in Relay, what you do, you already have an on-chain app with Relay and you can buy Bitcoins, like you can do DCAs using Bitcoin. Their users are already doing that. So basically, the way that they decided to implement Lightning is to add a swap button that users can choose how much of their current balance they are swapping into Lightning.
Okay.
So they have like a Bitcoin balance because their users are constantly buying Bitcoin from Relay. Then you kind of swap a part of your balance to Lightning. And then all of a sudden, you can send and receive payments in Lightning, like magically.
That's awesome.
That's kind of the Relay user experience. We have people like there's a new wallet called a Blitz wallet that is implemented a fully featured, really like a Breeze-like wallet using the Breeze SDK. We have people that are kind of implementing Lightning on the server side using the Breeze SDK just in order kind of to facilitate Lightning payments in a custodial fashion for their users. So you can.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
You can be an exchange, but you don't want to run your Lightning infrastructure. Use the Breeze SDK to send and receive Lightning payments. It's very easy.
I didn't even think about that. You could technically use the Breeze SDK to be like, let's say I'm setting up a federation personally, and like I want to do it with my brother and BTC sessions and like, you know, whatever. Like we got like five or six people that we want, and we're like, we're going to set up a Fedimint. I didn't think about the fact that we could actually plug into Breeze SDK on the back end.
Definitely.
So we don't have to think about like managing the Lightning side of things. And then we could just deal with our own multi-sig setup as like kind of our primary focus. Lightning is handled by the Breeze SDK software. And then Fedimint handles the eCash side of things for the users. And we're just kind of like a liquidity center. That's great.
Exactly.
That's great. I didn't even think about that. That makes so much sense though.
It's even integrated. People even integrated into BTC Pay server and into LNBeats. So you can have LNBeats running on with the Breeze SDK on the backend, and BTC Pay server running with the Breeze SDK on the backend. So the possibilities are endless. Or I'll give you an example of CrowdHealth. Carlos is implementing.
No kidding.
The breezes. Yes, yes.
Oh, that's awesome. I use CrowdHelp. I would love to be able to, like, I'm basically on a Bitcoin standard now. Like, even most of my stuff comes in as Bitcoin now. To be able to pay them over Lightning would be gold. That's awesome.
Exactly. It's not pay them. So it's so actually the experience is going to be peer-to-peer payments. So if you need to kind of fund your medical bill, you can kind of reach out to the CrowdHelp community. They are using the Breeze SDK to send peer-to-peer payments using Lightning to settle your medical bill. Like that's an amazing use.
And when that's when so you cool.
And that's exactly where I think we need to kind of to shift Lightning instead of talking wallets. You read my article. You know how how I'm against kind of the term wallet and kind of I think and we need to bring Lightning to existing applications instead of kind of building Lightning apps. We don't need Lightning apps. We need to bring Lightning to apps. And CrowdHelp is a perfect example where you have a concrete use case that will be better solved with Lightning. And there won't be any liquidity issues, by the way, in this use case, because it's CrowdHelp user to another CrowdHelp user. And you know how many use cases like that there are in the world? Like, imagine you could send funds to a TikTok user, or imagine you could take an Uber drive and pay your driver with Lightning. Like, the possibilities of just using the Lightning infrastructure as we have it right now, are endless.
Does this introduce a security issue because one of the things, as I understand it, and I'll explain this just to make sure that the user is on the same page, is that you're not actually having a different, every single app has a different Lightning instance or Lightning wallet. What they're doing is they're basically plugging into your Lightning through the Breeze SDK. In a sense,
there are two ways.
There are two ways. Okay.
Because the node is running in the cloud, multiple apps for the first time can connect to a single node.
Yes.
So you can have multiple mobile apps, desktop apps, whatever. They can all run against the same Lightning node in a non-custodial fashion. That's huge, by the way. We haven't talked about it, but that's just that from a user experience standpoint.
That's a big deal. Yeah.
Having a single balance across multiple apps, that can be a game changer. But put that aside, you do need right now to share the same seed between these different apps if you want to connect to the same node. So you kind of need to trust the app if you want to give it access to your cloud node. There's another model where you can, from a technical standpoint, you can just set up your own derivation path, or you can just generate another seed, and then you can generate another Lightning node. So again, the possibilities are endless. There are a lot of companies that actually want to have the multi-app configuration because, for example, Relay doesn't implement all the wallet features, or CrowdHelp doesn't implement all the wallet features, then they could tell users, okay, install Satimoto or install Bitbox or install the Breeze app, and then you can kind of use your balance in more ways.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, I want to make sure that I bring a little bit of attention to the fact that, like, having a single balance and a single, like, Lightning instance that is spread across multiple apps I know it probably seems like, oh, well, yeah, sure, that's obvious or whatever, but that I think people discount how much when you take this one user experience layer out of it, how unbelievably seamless and amazing that could be, that Lightning is its own thing that just exists in your little ecosystem of stuff, you know? Powerful. Now, one thing that I've thought about security, like this is immediately what I thought of in kind of exploring all of this on my own, is because this is such a powerful idea, and I'm not sure how much you play around with Nostr. I don't think I see you over there. I mean, I'm sure you're just busy with stuff.
I'm there. I'm mostly searching for breeze and commenting.
That's the way to do it. Well, I'll make sure. I'm not sure I see your stuff. Maybe I'm not even following you up there. That might be what's going on. One of the cool things, though, is the InSec bunker idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so my thinking was that because the power of being able to, like the idea of having like a centralized service, like I have a producer now, and we work together with a lot of different things, and it's great to be able to give granular access to some sort of service or app or social media or something like that, so that he can push something out while I'm not around, or he doesn't need my explicit permission. But the beautiful thing, but you know, I have to require that service to implement some ridiculous thing, and if they do it differently than some other service, I have no control over it, you know. Mm-hmm. And maybe they even charge me an extra $20 a month to be able to put on another user. But the InSec bunker idea, which I think is just beautiful in the context of like how to use cryptographic keys, and I immediately thought of this in the context of the Breeze SDK, is that actually having every single app just generate its own generic key, and then going to your Greenlight instance, whatever your instance is, and just saying this key, which has nothing to do with the seed for my Lightning, this key has permission to do X. It can send payments up to this amount, or it needs a two-factor confirmation from my phone or from my desktop or something like that. And then you can just totally give it the degree of control that you want, because you're not actually giving those apps keys. You're letting those apps create keys, and you're saying these keys can do this. So I can say my Nostr app literally only has access to 1,000 sats at a time. And so it's purely Zap related, whereas my CrowdHealth can send up to $300 or something, you know.
It's definitely where it's headed. Mm-hmm. In Greenlight, there's a mechanism called Runes, R-U-N-E. So it's very similar to macaroons in LND, if you're familiar with the macaroon concept.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you can set up like the degree of access you can give to a specific app, and instead of connecting with the node seed, then you can connect with your rune and kind of have a granular permission level for your specific app. The thing is that if that's the case, you will need a signer app. The only way to, because it's a truly non-custodial solution, and the keys are not running even in the memory of Runelight, someone need to sign the Lightning transaction.
So you were signing in the model currently, you sign locally in the app. So you just need an active signer. Interesting. Okay.
Exactly. So with the runes model, you will need a signer app. It can be a wallet that you trust.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a device running in your home. But you need an active signer to work together with the apps that are based on runes. But definitely... today already, you can do a lot of stuff with runes. For example, you can create an admin app for accounting, or that gives you kind of a read-only access to your Lightning node. The threshold and kind of involving another side makes it a bit more challenging, because you need another app, but it's definitely doable. Like it's there. The infrastructure is there. It's just part of like building together the future of Lightning. What you're envisioning is already feasible.
Yeah. That's so cool. This is going to be nuts as this really starts to roll out. That's exciting to see that we've got stuff in beta.
You can think about like an authenticator app, like similar to Google Authenticator.
Exactly.
That kind of set ups all this permission, and you can revoke permission. You can do everything there. And maybe this app is actually the designer,
mm-hmm.
but someone needs to build it. Like, yeah. Guy, go for it. Build this app.
I'm working on a project. Okay, so in that context, let's say I am going to build it. I've been completely enamored with the tools around Holepunch and Keet and the Pair runtime that just launched. How difficult, like how is the Breeze SDK, like what language is it written in, and how difficult do you see the implementation? Because one thing that I see that would be amazing is plugging that into an app that has in the background it's running Pair and communicating to my home devices, and then I have literally my MacBook and my Linux machine with the keys on it as signing devices, so that either device can sign. And if there's unreliable internet or one of them doesn't communicate at one point or something, it has, I basically have a always online potential to sign, and then I can lock down or treat my security on those devices as needed. And everything else is just peer-to-peer talking and finding those devices on the network.
I'm super psyched about the kind of the Pair runtime and the entire kind of Holepunch ecosystem. Peer-to-peer messaging or peer-to-peer communication shouldn't be done on Lightning. We need to have a better alternative, and I think the Pair runtime definitely provides a very solid infrastructure. And the potential of building peer-to-peer applications on top of the Pair runtime are mind-blowing. And if you think about that as kind of your communication layer, and you think about the Breeze SDK as the peer-to-peer payment layer, then everything seems very natural. The Breeze SDK is written in Rust, and it has like bindings to many languages. Definitely all the popular mobile frameworks, React Native, Flutter. We have Python and C#, or Go, whatever. I don't know what are you using specifically, but the only thing that is being worked on is kind of our WebAssembly support. We're working on a WebAssembly support, so you'll be able to use the Breeze SDK also from the context of a web application, not just mobile desktop server. You'll also be able to run it from a context of a website.
Wow.
And that's going to be amazing as well. I don't know what you're missing. We're missing kind of the JavaScript because of the lack of like execution environment for our SDK, which is kind of the WebAssembly execution environment. All the bindings are in place. I don't think we're missing any of the popular languages out there.
Hell yeah. That's crazy. God, this is awesome. That's awesome. Dude, I'm so excited, and I can't believe, I got to say, just congratulations on like how far you've come with this. It's so cool that like I felt like I found you and like what you were building so early on, you know, and I was mm-hmm. so excited about it from the get-go. It just clicked. Yeah. It just sounded to me like in my mental picture, like it just fit. It just fit into where I thought things were going. And you've done such a good job of taking general idea and executing exactly. Putting the code to the paper, putting the tire to the ground, that sort of thing. And I just got to say, it's awesome, and it's cool to see where it has come. And 100% we will be watching where it is going.
I think you probably still have like the free 1 million Satoshi channel that we've opened in the early days of Breeze, probably, right?
I probably do. I bet I do. Hell yeah.
But yes, things have come far. Despite all the FUD, I'm very, very bullish about Lightning, where Lightning has become. Talk to me, let's rewind 3 or 4 years ago to see Kraken and Binance and soon Coinbase implementing Lightning, Lightning becoming the de facto interoperability standard between all these different Bitcoin solutions, the improvement in LSP, the inventions of LSPs, the evolution of LSPs, we haven't talked about kind of where I think LSPs are going to head, but I think like the potential of providing additional services on top of LSPs and how LSP is going to be part of this kind of interoperability layer of Lightning. I think the future is very bright, but let's not oversell Lightning for what it's not. And let's focus on solving real world, real life issues instead of blubbering in Twitter.
Yeah. I hear you. No, it's Twitter. Don't call it X.
Yeah.
So I don't want to. Do you have time for one more little topic string before we wrap this up? Okay. One thing that I forgot to mention earlier, because I'm really curious how you're thinking about it, because you guys are building like crazy. How do you think about and where are your concerns when it comes to the regulatory environment, especially when we talk about like Lightning as like financial services and stuff that could be provided? It's all non-custodial, which is the beauty of it. But I feel like we're not going to squeeze. They're going to change the rules so that that doesn't matter, because what they don't like is the fact that the user has control.
If they want to kill it, they will kill it. That's basically what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm worried about that. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about, we haven't kind of opened the topic of stablecoins, but if we're talking about kind of bringing stablecoins to Lightning, I think the risk isn't technical. Like I don't really care. I think what I care about is kind of shifting the regulatory spotlight to Lightning, because Lightning will have this stablecoin capabilities.
Yeah.
And I think that will bring regulatory scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very concerned about that. Of course, from a technical standpoint, Lightning node isn't really that different than ISP. But regulators don't care. Like if they can add
if
something
you could possibly,
to FinCEN that says,
possibly expect them to even begin to understand the nuance there. They can't even understand what the hell. They don't even understand what the hell proof of work is for. So like,
yeah, and they want to kill self what they call self-hosted wallets. They want to kill that. So of course they can kind of kill Lightning nodes if they want to. Mm-hmm. I hope, and that's why I'm working very hard to make sure that's not going to happen, or at least it will be too late for them kind of to stop Lightning from being implemented, exactly like it's too late for them to stop Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So
move fast and build things.
Move fast, build, but build correctly, and don't give them an opportunity to say that you need a money transmitter license, and don't give them the opportunity to say that it's something else other than peer-to-peer payments. And I have to be completely honest. That's the thing that worries me about bringing stablecoins to Bitcoin is exactly that.
Yeah.
The fact that once you have stablecoins of Bitcoin and there's another level of trust, because someone is issuing the coins in Bitcoin, I worry about that.
Yeah, that's a good point. When we start, it doesn't matter what it looks like, and it doesn't matter even how technically it gets implemented. If you have something that says this is fiat on Bitcoin, they're going to think this is our game. This is ours to control, because this is dollars.
That's not an alternative solution. Mm-hmm. You see the stablecoins discussions that are going on in Congress right now. Mm-hmm. It's fiat. We need to control fiat. And if we'll have a future where stablecoins are issued on Lightning, then Lightning will definitely become. Definitely, I'm not a prophet, but I think the chances are higher that Lightning is going to be under regulatory pressure.
Yeah. No, I that's perfectly logical. I think that makes a lot of sense, and is certainly something to think about when it comes to development direction.
It's no longer an alternative system, right? Mm-hmm. It's becoming part of the fiat system, basically.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's a good place to wrap it up. I want to, where can people follow you for anybody who doesn't already? Sad life that they live, but they can fix that. Where can people follow you and the project and find out
first
more?
First, they can follow Bitcoin Audible because you're practically reading all my articles on your show. So
that's about it's like 80% of them at least.
Thank you for that. But I'm everywhere. I'm in Twitter. I'm in Oster. I'll send you my my key after the show.
All right, sweet.
I'm on Medium. I'm on Telegram in the Breeze app group and the Breeze SDK group. And like, if someone wants to get in touch, it's very easy. And gotcha. I'm available 24/7.
Hell yeah! I'll have all the links in the show notes. I'll try to get every one of them that you mentioned there to make it easy. So everybody, just look down in the description, and you'll have everything you need to go find Roy. Bug him, ask him many questions, and explore what they've built.
Cool. And if you're not coming to Madeira, right, to Bitcoin Atlantis?
I almost did for about like a week as I was like planning. I really almost broke down and did it, and I thought I was going to do it, but things just didn't line up. So no, I won't be there, and I'm very sad about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to be there if someone wants to kind of get together. There, I'm available, and I'm sure I'll see you. So if you're not coming to, we have BTC Prague, or no, that's Europe.
No, not BTC Prague. No. Are you going to Plan B?
Nashville, Plan B for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I will see you there. I will see you there. Okay. I'm going to Plan B and okay. Nashville and BitBlock Boom, and I'm basically nixing everything else this year. I got a busy year.
cool.
Awesome.
So looking forward to it.
Hell yeah, man. Dude, thank you so much for coming back on the show. Thank you for talking about this. Thank you for building all the stuff that you're building. And I'll hit you up on Telegram. We'll talk.
Great. Thank you so much, guys.
Take it easy, dude.